The Mike Missinelli Show.
Turn your radios up. Mike's ready to rock.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Mike Missinelli Show. Glad to be back after a few days of vacation. And, you know, I go away and the whole world turns mad. I don't know what it is. Apparently, there was a controversy at the Oscars. I know you guys probably talked about it. And, well, we'll touch on it a little bit today because I haven't had a chance to say anything about it. It's put me in a kind of a shoebox because I don't really know how to react to it because I could, like, kind of admire both sides of it. But in any event, let's talk about what we're going to talk about today. So let's just recap. All right, so Embiid's getting hosed. The Sixers with a big game tonight against the Bucks after winning a big game and then losing a game against the best team in the NBA, which has somehow triggered conclusions that, you know, they're not ready for prime time and they can't beat. Listen, everything comes down to a playoff series, all right? So these one-game things, I think we have a tendency to overreact to. And you might be reading it right. Maybe they're not ready to beat the Phoenix Suns in a seven-game series. That'll be determined. I'm taking it one step at a time. I look at where their standing is now and where all these teams are kind of bunched, and I don't have any kind of problem where they sit in the standings. I think right now where they're going to fall is going to be an advantageous first-round series for them. So I'm all good with the Sixers right now. And I'm trying not to get ahead of myself on whether they can win the whole thing. Take it one series at a time. We'll see what happens and who they match up with in the second round, because I don't even know who the number one seed would be if they stay in that 4-5 situation. So there's no way to really to predict what is going to happen here. All right, Villanova in the Final Four, one of the most amazing things I've seen with that team, the way they are. Now, unfortunately, I think it's going to end here because they lost a starter. But for Villanova to get to the Final Four with this team is a pretty amazing achievement. And I know you guys, I was reading the tweets, Tyrone, about how people weren't on board with Villanova, that Villanova's an outsider school and all this kind of thing. And I was like kind of looking at it from afar going, come on, man. Like, enough with that. I mean, this team, this coach, like, forget about the school being haughty, right? Whatever you want to think of Villanova, and it's out of your price range, and they're haughty-taughty, and you all come from New York. The program represents this area. And if you can divorce yourself from the fact that it's Villanova and it's this haughty institution, just look at the achievement. Every time Villanova goes on a national run like this, Philadelphia's looked at favorably. So I don't understand what that beef is all about, and we'll get through that too. Now, the Phillies. It's really, they traded Adam Hayes later today. And I don't know, first of all, Tyron, how are you feeling about that? You all right?
It's a tough day.
I could see it would be a tough day.
Tough day, but it makes room for my other guy, Mickey Moniak, to make the opening day roster.
You got one or the other. That's right. They got rid of the one. Here's what's interesting about the Phillies. Like, other teams will tack on first-round draft picks. The Phillies have to choose one first-round draft pick over another that failed. Like, in two instances. One was the Hazley Moniak thing, and now it's the Stop Bohm thing. Instead of going, oh, you know what? We got four. They said they only have two. So, and this is the leftover from the Klentak era, where they take guys and they don't really think anything about it, that they're going to project to anything. And so then they have to recover on their mistakes, and it's what's put them in this particular state as far as their farm system goes. Now, the way they've stacked up players look pretty good to me. I'm going to have a fun time watching hitters. Castellano with a big bomb yesterday with Harper on base, and Schwarber finally got one, and Moniak has three this year, and Stott, and so all these guys are raking, and I think it's going to be a really fun summer. But it is interesting how the Phillies put it together. Let me just touch on the Will thing, because I was not watching the Oscars live, and I was at a bar on a tropical island enjoying a drink late at night.
Fancy.
And my niece texts me, oh my God, are you watching the Oscars? And I go, no. So then I start going on Twitter and I see all this whole blue, and I see the act and I see what he said. And I was like, at first, pretty much like everybody else, I was like, okay, well, that was planned or something. And then I realized it wasn't. And I'm going, Boy, this really puts me into a dilemma. Because I've gone off before on things that I regret. And I look at the reasons why I do it. And in that particular situation, I'm trying to put myself in the mind of Will Smith. And I'm going, okay, his instincts were to protect his wife, which I don't have a problem with. And I think that he saw how that it really upset her, and it challenged his manhood to do something about it, and then he did it. Now I look at the Chris Rock thing, and I go, "What was the point of the comment? Like, it's not even funny. It's not even a biting thing. It's just kind of like thrown out there." So I thought that was inappropriate. And then I'm going, "Well, I probably, if I had time to think about it, would have said, yeah, I got to defend my wife. And two, I'm going to go backstage because we go to a commercial. I'm going to have something to say to this dude." And that's probably the way I would handle it. Now, I can't put myself in his brain at that particular moment that his instincts told him he's got to protect his wife because this has been a relationship where she has been kind of high maintenance. And so he was in a tough spot. If he doesn't do anything, he looks bad to her. If he does do something, he looks bad in front of a national audience. If he handles his business behind the scenes, maybe that's the best way to do it, because then the word gets out that he did confront Chris Rock, right? So yeah. I don't know, like, how I'm like in between. I almost admired that he wanted to stick up for his wife, but the national TV part of it is throwing me somehow.
Yeah, I get that. I would have, once I got on stage, I'd have walked by him, and then I would have waited for him.
Yeah, and
backstage.
Right. That's what I would have got out of my seat and gone backstage like right away, waiting for the segment
but
to go.
I still would have walked on stage.
Oh, you would
right by.
Okay, so you would have.
So you would know what was coming,
and you would have shown the world that you'd.
Yes.
Okay.
I just wouldn't.
That had bothered him.
Yeah, bothered her.
Yeah, bothered her.
Yeah, that's what But I would have waited for him backstage. And then as soon as he got off backstage, I would have slapped him.
Yeah, now there's so many opinions. This is really a polarizing thing because there's so many opinions on one side or the other. So, Jen, I'm sorry I didn't get to. I know you had an opinion and you've talked about this, but just for my edification, what was your initial instinct?
My whole thing was I was curious whether they wrote the joke, whether Chris Rock and the Oscar writers wrote that joke, knowing that Jada Pinkett Smith has alopecia and knowing that Amy Schumer just came out a few days earlier talking about a condition with her hair that she had. Mm-hmm. Why would they write a joke like that when those two things combined directed at Jada Pinkett Smith? That was my whole thing. However, if I was Jada Pinkett Smith and my husband got up there and defended me in that way, I would have sat there with a smile on my face and been the proudest wife ever.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't condone violence, however.
Yeah,
should never hurt somebody, hit somebody, whatever.
Violence.
But I would have been very proud to be his wife at that moment.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, that's a lot of people say that. A lot of people say that the violence is never acceptable. And I can't sit here and be a hypocrite and talk about violence being not acceptable. I just like watching it on TV that way. Felt uncomfortable, but I wouldn't have done nothing. So,
right.
I don't know where that leaves me on this situation.
Yeah.
I'm still thinking about it. Like, what is there? There's probably not a right answer to anything that involves this Will Smith thing.
Right.
It's just how you interpret it and what your opinion of what's right
exactly.
is. All right.
Right.
So, anyway, Sixers tonight in a big spot against the Bucks. And so, first of all, let me get your viewpoint before we get to a break on the Sixers being ready for a primetime game like this, and do they need to win this game to establish themselves as some kind of front runner?
James Harden has to play well tonight.
Okay.
The other Sixers have already shown they could beat the Bucks.
Mm-hmm.
Harden has to play well in this game. He didn't play. People are now they're linking the Nets and the Suns games together, and they're looking at him. And B had 37-15 on Sunday. They're not looking at him. Mm-hmm. Harden has to be good, and Drew Holiday is a very good man-to-man defender, and you know they're going to put him on him. He's got to play well tonight, and if he plays well, the Sixers will take care of business. Harden has to play well tonight. If he doesn't, the fans are not going to have any faith in him when he goes into the playoffs. Harden must play very well tonight, even though it's a regular season game, and if he plays well, everybody else will fall in line, and they'll take care of business. It's on him.
All right,
tonight.
So what have you been thinking about over the last several days about the way he has played?
Well, I mean, against the Clippers, he was fantastic.
Yes, he was.
He was just he was bad late and doing that foul baiting stuff against the Suns. Suns also are the best team in the NBA right now. Right now, they're ahead of the Sixers. They're ahead of everybody. They got 61 wins for a reason. They're fantastic. He has to play well tonight. Tonight is where it's going to count as far as the fans' faith in him. It doesn't actually, they don't have to win. It must win for it changing their fate because they play a bunch of easy games after this game. In fact, all the rest of the games are winnable except maybe the Raptors game, depending on how badly the Raptors need that game that particular night in Toronto. But short of that, they can win out if they so choose after this one. But if he doesn't play well tonight, the people are going to say he comes up small in big games, and he's not going to be able to overcome that locally unless he then does it in the playoffs. But going into the playoffs, no one's going to have faith in him.
Jen?
That's tough, isn't it? I agree with Tyrone. He needs to step up and do his thing and get past this game. I didn't think the Suns game was that big of a loss, right?
I agree.
You know, watching the game, it was, you know, the Sixers went on a run, the Suns went on a run, and it was frustrating because I thought they had a chance to win it. But going into this game tonight, I was like, this is the one that they really need to win. But James Harden needs to be the James Harden that he was those first five games when he first got here. He just needs to step up a little bit.
All right. Of course, we're talking about, what was the other thing that I wanted to bring up to you that I completely lost my mind and forgot? The Embiid thing. This Philadelphia persecution mentality that people don't want anybody from Philadelphia to win anything. Is that what we're saying here?
Yeah, it's something like that because it doesn't make sense. First off, if you do a dirty play the way Jokic did, where he put a guy out for multiple weeks, that's usually disqualified for MVP. Not with him. Also, Embiid's better than him.
Yeah.
Flat better. But and not only is he winning now, according to the journalists with ESPN, it's a blowout. Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't make sense. And there's no other explanation for it. I'll tell you what. That's the most pleasant explanation for it. Any other explanation is far worse. So I hope that's what it is.
It's ridiculous, frankly. And I'm looking at it like, okay, the Denver is like an unthreatening sports environment to people who follow sports and vote for us. So they go, okay, it's not threatening. We'll vote for Jokic. It feels less threatening to vote for him. I don't understand what people are looking at, frankly. But so I agree with it when it comes to this. I try not to get too heavily involved in this everybody's picking on Philadelphia thing. And I like to just give everybody the finger, frankly, who looks at Philadelphia that way nationally. And apparently they do. So whatever. Whatever happens, happens. To me, the most important thing is whether the Sixers can win something rather than if Embiid is going to get the MVP. Because we all know here that he's probably the MVP. All right. So we'll start the show. Here's how you get in. 610-632-0975. Mike Missanelli Show is back after this.
The Mike Missanelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5, The Fanatic.
All right, 2 o'clock hour. Mike Missanelli Show, 97.5, The Fanatic. 2 o'clock hour is brought to us by Ferguson HVAC Lyon Conklin. Attention, HVAC contractors. For equipment, parts, and supplies for every heating and cooling job, just visit one of Ferguson's Cal locations in Bent Salem, King of Prussia, Pensauk, or Westchester today. And start the Twitter poll. It is brought to us by Paul B. Moore and Sons in Doylestown. Mower time. Make sure that mower's working. Schedule a mower maintenance before you actually turn it out because, you might be polluting the environment. You might need new spark plugs. Just go to poweredbymoyer.com. They'll answer all your questions. Jen Scordo with today's Twitter poll. Jen, what do you have?
All right, we're going Sixers today. Does James Harden have to play well tonight for you to believe in the Sixers' playoff chances? Can answer yes, he must step up, or no, just a regular game. Right now, yes is winning by 69%.
All righty, sounds good. I was thinking about this during the break because these people who cover the leagues these days, these national people, rely a lot on some kind of analytical examination to justify what they're going to vote for. So this story says that the straw poll says that Jokic finished with 62 first place votes, and Embiid had 29. Now that I look at that, and I go, "That's impossible. Like that's not even like that shouldn't even be. It should be negated. Like that's how ridiculous it is that he would get 62 first place votes, and Embiid would only get 29, and hence he's way behind in the voting. So I know people rely on these analytical evaluations to come up with this. So my question is this. Where have we lost sports forever where you actually look at it with your own eyes? That honesty and truth and vision, is that gone now?
Yes.
It is gone. What does that say? That's a terrible thing to have happen to sports.
Yes, it will eventually ruin sports. It's just a matter of how long it's going to take. It won't be instant. Like, it's not going to happen overnight. We still like the games themselves. Most people like the entertainment part of it. But eventually, it will kill off that element of it because you can't judge things. And they also ignore certain stats that they shouldn't. For example, when they do net rating, because the stat geeks love it. Jokic, when they're on the floor, they're plus 2.5. Without him on the floor, it's 5.9. That's a minus 3.4 net differential. Embiid, plus 6.9 with him off the floor, plus 0.8 with him off. That's a plus 6.1 net differential, showing that the Sixers play better with Embiid on the floor than without, while the Nuggets play better with Jokic off the floor. And they don't take that when they dismiss that.
No, they don't take that into consideration. And that was put out by Scott Hanlon today, right?
Drew Hanlon. Yeah.
That's about Embiid. He's obviously he coaches Embiid, but you know that's telling. You're talking about a guy like Jokic is people think he's a good defender, and yet they substitute for him at the end of games on defense. You know, like what? And if you're watching that kind of thing, you're supposed to be following the NBA. You watch that kind of thing. Listen. I watch Embiid, I watch Jokic, I see what each guy means. But Jokic's a good player, but
very good.
Like, I'm putting too much emphasis on this thing. If they're taking him off the floor, that means he's weak in an area that I can't trust him. So that's got to factor into my evaluation. And so on top of that is also this thing that's been bugging me for a really long time. Because I see these poor local guys who try to cover sports anymore. And they are just, they're pawns in a lot of ways to the bigger guys who break the bigger stories on Twitter or whatever. And it's a poisoned area now. Like, you know, I came through an era where it was a lot different. So now, like, you don't get it. If you don't get the information, you're irrelevant. If you posture yourself as one of these national guys that everybody wants to have break their stories, then if you don't get it, you're irrelevant. But to get it, you got to lick boot. And so, like, guys that are breaking stories are almost technically on payrolls of agencies. And, like, what has happened to sports? What do we have any salvage left on truth and honesty?
No. No.
That's a terrible thing.
It is terrible, but it's terrible. The what will save sports, the part is, you can't play around with championships. So the problem is we pretend, and this happened solely because of the Jordan era, that championships are a team situation. Like, that's why we forget Scottie Pippen was great. Like, it's just, oh, Jordan did it. 6-0 Jordan, like Jordan did it alone. But, so the championship part, the winning and the losing, that part is pure still. As long as we don't let people gamble on the games and we try to fix the terrible refs. But that's pretty pure. It's everything else that's dirty right now. But the games themselves are great still. In fact, greater than ever. The actual games, if people bother to watch said games, they're better than ever. It's just everything surrounding the game between the talking heads and having to do hot takes just because. And honestly, one of the main culprits of this is Stephen A. Smith, if I can be completely honest.
You're right about
that. He's a big part of the problem. He's not at all part of the solution because he never injects common sense into the conversation. He's just doing his hot take thing to rinse and repeat the next day. And then people follow him. Oh, he's making how much money? Well, I have to then be just like him and make stuff up and talk garbage. And then I'll make money. And then I can be like this guy.
The whole world has gotten out of whack. And the consumer doesn't benefit from it. And it's really, it's bugged me. Like, I go, I see a local guy go, according to Shams, and I go, man, dude, this is your beat. Like, Shams shouldn't be breaking the story. And then I go, well, it's impossible for me to break it. Because teams now want to curry favor with the guy to get it out nationally to make themselves look the best. So it's like a no-win situation for anybody to cover sports anymore.
Yes, there's no point anymore in breaking anything real that would be negative because you'll only be punished for it unless that person's going to get fired or traded. Like, the only way you could talk, like, people can't even be honest about Ben Simmons. Because if he plays, then you want to have that interview. Like that Pablo guy at ESPN. Mm-hmm. He's been lying, knowingly lying about Ben Simmons. Not, like, knowing things and intentionally omitting it from his stories and podcasts, all with the hope that if and when Ben finally speaks, when he decides to actually play basketball, he'll get the exclusive. So he'll lie about other stuff and just make stuff up for hoping to get the carrot of the interview at the end.
It's like, in the end, like, people are like, well, it's just sour grapes on your part. Yeah, I guess it is, but it's also hurt you as a consumer. Like, we try to do the show, at least I've had to try to do the show all these years. Get my totally honest opinion without regard to who's going to get mad at me. And believe me, a lot of people have got mad at me. And my thing is, listen, truth and honesty has to prevail. I'm going to be fair with you. If you come on and I'm going to interview you, I'm going to be fair with you. And there are certain people that will respect that, certain people that won't respect it. And like Daryl Morey came on. He respects the fact I'm going to ask him hard questions, and he's going to give me answers. And that's like the last bastion of honesty to me, for the consumer. But then you see all this other stuff that's going on, and it just tweaked me with this Embiid vote. And I go, what exactly about Philadelphia does the national media have against? Like, what is it that makes the national media go against us? I'm trying to pinpoint it, and I can't figure it out. I've tried to deal with it by ignoring idiots. Who are, you know, like, I don't respect these national people. I don't get gooey about the Pablo that Torres is or whatever. And I know Steven, but these shows that go on, I try not to watch or pay attention to because I all know they're self-serving and I know the business has changed. So I try not to, like, take it to heart when people say Philadelphia is bad, this and that. I go, you don't know, and F you. Is how I try to deal with it. But I know a lot of people don't deal with it that way. And they look at it like, how dare they be? So what is it about us that gives off a negative vibe to the people who give us a negative vibe?
But it's always, it's always something. It's not, the ball changes. They talked about the stupid snowballs for 50 years.
Yeah.
Then they'll switch, but a lot of them didn't like the process. Now, I will admit, Hinkie was a problem. Hinkie had to go. I know that makes some people uncomfortable.
The process is still being held against.
Oh, it absolutely is. And
even though other people have done it.
Right, but no one was ever as bad at it as Hinkie as far as speaking. The fact that he did all those moves and didn't just have Brett Brown represent him, that was a mistake. That's why he should have been fired. Like, he should have been fired. He should have never gotten another job because you can't blatantly lose like that and then not own it in front of people. Instead, he hid in his mom's basement and had Brett Brown take all the slings and the arrows. Mm-hmm. That was shameful by Hinkie. Hinkie deserved to go. But people then got mad about them firing Hinkie. So they were mad about Hinkie not speaking and giving access and hiding, which was correct. But then they got mad that the Sixers fired Hinkie, even though he 100% had to be fired because he mismanaged the way that he did the process. And then they get mad about that. And then they're mad at this guy. And then they're mad at that guy. And then we were so mean to Ben Simmons because we asked him to shoot a basket. It changes all the time, but they're always looking for something to be upset about.
Here's the thing that I find that people are most threatened by. We speak our minds when something's on it. And a lot of people, like national people, look at that and they go, well, that makes us arrogant. No, we are We are in truth and honesty. We are consumers of a good product. And if we don't get a good product, we speak on it. And somehow that is held against us.
Yes. Just like with the Simmons situation where they dropped the bombshell about his sister. And then they got mad when a bunch of Philadelphia people responded and said, we all knew about that. No one asked them about it. No one asked. Everybody just went about our business. We let that be 100. We knew the explosive things his sister was saying. We let that slide completely. No one brought it up to Ben.
Uh-huh.
No one made it a talking point on any of the programs. No one did anything about that. Can you believe this fan base was... fan base didn't say word what about it. Neither did anyone else.
It's we're crazy because we care. That's the mantle that Philadelphia fans get. And I scream. Like, I've been over Colin Cowherd in arguments with him about this whole thing. Like, we're crazy because we care. Why do we care is really what you should examine. That's a sociologist problem. If you want to understand why we take sports so seriously, do a sociological project on it. As far as examining sports, this is what we are. We do care about the teams. They bring us that much joy and that much agony. Now, if you want to delve into why that is, that's a project that professors can take up. Right? You can't chastise a fan base because we care about having a good product. Like, that to me runs afoul of everything a sports fan should not be. Like, if you don't care... What are you? What are you? It means that other things matter more to you. Well, here, sports matters to us. Like in the Great Northwest, you might care more about fishing or the outdoors. We don't rip you for that, right? We don't say, oh, those people out there, all they do like is fishing. No, we accept the fact that you're unique and that you like the great outdoors. We're unique here in the Northeast Corridor, and especially here, and I say this, that we're more passionate than even New York, and I worked in New York, and I know that. So why is that a bad thing? That's what I would love to sit down with these people who make these judgments. Oh, well, wait a minute. Embiid plays for Philadelphia. Jokic plays for Denver. Yeah, I'm going to vote for Jokic. And by the way, I have analytical data that will justify it. Like, this is what I don't get.
Right. And the other part is, where this is one solution we could do. We have to start winning a lot. That's the one thing that would disarm those idiots is a bunch of titles. Because when you win, if they hate that much at that point, it'll become clear that they're just haters. Right now, because we don't win enough, they can get that off. But even the biggest haters in the world will recognize if they're still talking bad about us if they start winning. Like if the Phillies have the big year that they're capable of possibly having, you won't hear a lot of hate about the Phillies then. And if the Sixers can turn it around and win the whole thing, then you won't have to hear about any Jokic anymore because we'll know who the best center is because he has the title. But that's the only solution anymore because they're not going to be, you can't reason with people because they're barely people.
And this is a question for all of those people who make those assertions against us. But I'm curious to know as a Philadelphia fan why you think that we are looked at with disdain. Like I've never really gotten it. Like what's the worst offense that we have ever committed? We care? That's what it is. And in caring, sometimes you'll care loudly, right? Because what people aren't going to hear you unless you complain loudly. So I don't understand, like, what do you want from us? And I'm asking local people, but this is really a national question. So if you can try to answer it from a national viewpoint and put yourself in the mind of these people who make these judgments on us and would do something like overwhelmingly vote for Jokic over Embiid, I think it would be a great conversation. And then maybe somebody out there is listening, some national producer who can finally advise his people. You know, now I get it. Now I understand him a little bit. Because unless you're on this soil... You make these judgments that aren't valid.
It's like the
Kobe Bryant example is a living example to me of like what we're talking about here. When they booed Kobe Bryant at the All-Star game, and people were like, "Well, look at these barbarians!" Boo! But like you have no idea like why they started the book because they care because he insulted where they live. like they want to take pride in where they live. They want to take pride in what they do and how they root. And this guy came along, and God rest his soul, because Cubby's one of the great people that ever were produced out of this area. But at the time, you're looking at it like, what? Well, why would you do that to us? And we care. And people say, well, look how barbarian they are, because they care.
Yes.
I just never got it.
You're 100% about right. There is one other part we are responsible for. The proverbial we. We have some self-hate.
Yeah, it's a form of insecurity.
Well, it is. The example would be, if B had 37-15 Sunday, if he has 21-10 tonight, tomorrow people will say he's garbage. We're bad at that.
Yeah.
That's us. That's not them. Mm-hmm. And then when they see us infighting like that, mm-hmm. stupidly, because the guy's been great all year, at some point just give it up. But I guarantee someone on hold right now.
Oh, you mean the guys that he needs to spend more time in the pros? Those guys? He needs to spend more time in the postmans.
Right. Those guys.
Yeah.
The self-haters, though, they do make us look bad because we are a very intelligent fan base.
Yeah, but we try to really slay those people.
We do.
Well.
Not everybody. First of all, there's people in media who are those people. Problematic. That goes much higher than us. That's bosses not really hiring smart sports people. Not everybody that works in sports talk radio in this business knows sports in this city. That's unfortunate. That's a problem that we have here. And then they're allowed to then share that stupidity. Uh-huh. And that makes us all look bad when we let two or three prominent idiots mm-hmm. run amok. And that's one thing I also wish we could solve.
Yeah,
because then they go, see, this Philadelphia agrees with me. He's an idiot, but he's on my side, so I like him.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. There's also this story today on Howie Roseman speaking about the lack of offseason moves. Now, 93% of what he has said in this is a hunk of garbage. And but the way the industry has changed is that we can't even say it's a hunk of garbage because there's so many people that cover this team, especially this general manager would lay down the hammer on people who actually said, you know, what you just said was garbage. Like, we've lost that component, and hence we've lost some honesty. And I can't change the times. I know I don't want to sound like the old man, get off my lawn, but times have changed to the point where you're sometimes not getting the truth, and you've got to really see through the truth beyond what people are telling you is the truth, in which case you use your own eyes, which gets me back to Embiid. Use your own freaking eyes.
Real fast, 20 seconds. Nick Sirianni, Barnett, right now in his career, has more penalties.
Right.
Then sacks. Personal foul. And this is what he said today.
We believe in Derek Barnett. Derek Barnett is everything that embodies what we want in the characteristics of a player. He's tough. He's competitive. He's got high football IQ. He's got high character. He loves football. And I love Derek Barnett. All right. I love the type of player and the type of person that he is.
Now, you see, this is what I mean. Like, that's a hunk of garbage. And he's allowed to say that without being challenged on it, that it's a hunk of garbage. And this is where the industry has changed. Because if you do challenge him, because frankly, that should be a fight. That really should be a verbal sparring match after hearing a comment like that. And you know it, and I know it, and the fans know it also. Now, Nick Sirianni seems like a nice fella. He's going to get away with a lie. Because the business has changed. Because whoever challenges that now goes to the back of the line. Yeah. And that's the way it happens.
And it was in that big loud room. That's why we're not playing more of it. That echoey, that's the whole time. He doesn't go to a quiet spot to have this conversation. Let's go in the echoiest place ever. So, because I can't do as much back and forth because of that. So even though we can't do Zoom anymore, let me go to the worst place on earth to speak and just say drivel.
It seems calculated, doesn't it?
The only thing I can hope is that people see through that, what we just played.
Barnett!
The majority of people who follow this team are smart to see through crap that either the general manager or the head coach would feed you. All right, now, we've covered a lot of ground there. So, like, it wasn't one zeroed-in bullseye point. It's kind of a wide-open point when it comes to this. But I think you get the idea of what's kind of bothering us today. So here's how you get in. 610-632-0750. 800-585-0975. I'm on the front line here, baby. Front
line. That's right, Mike.
Back after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Let's get the man who covers the Sixers for The Athletic on the line. His name is Rich Hoffman. He's on the Comcast Business Hotline. Hello, Rich.
Hey, Mike.
All right, Rich, where do we stand right now? Because Harden good, and then Harden not so good next night. And we're talking about the possibility that he really, to make the fan base feel a little more comfortable about this team, he has to play really well against a conference team tonight. You feel the same way?
I certainly feel like that would make a lot of people feel better, Mike. It's so weird, the roller coaster he puts you on, where, I mean, some of these bad games are really bad in particular. Like, he really struggles to make 2-point field goals. Like, the Nets and the Suns game, he didn't make a 2-point field goal in any of those games, and he's kind of flailing and taking these bad shots at the rim. So I don't know how to reconcile that when on Friday night at Staples Center, he scored like 25 points in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not against a terrible team either. It's not against an elite team that's going to play, in the second round of the NBA playoffs. So it's a bit of a roller coaster with this guy, Mike. I do think, like, his hamstring is a little bit concerning to me. Like, I was watching him, he grabs it a little bit during games, still stays in. But yeah, I mean, it would be nice. It seems like a lot of these bad games come against the teams that you're going to see in the playoffs. So.
Not good. All right, so I actually think he's going to have a big game tonight. I hope that's not wishful thinking, but I get the concern about it. Now let's look at the way Doc has shaped this team. Now, in your mind, does he have the nine that he's going to use?
Yeah, it kind of fluctuates in between, I would say, 8 and 10. But to me, I think, like, if you're going to settle on nine, the last two spots are probably going to be Danny Green and Shake Milton would be the guys that I'm looking at. Like, I think when he goes to eight, which he does in some of these games, like, he didn't play a lot the other game. Like, I think he mentions first, like, oh, we didn't get Shake into the game over Korkmaz. So, yeah, I do think he's got, like, the 8 or 9 guys. It's just a question if he gets to all the 9 players, I would say.
All right, so let's look at the standings. And, again, it to me, if they finish fourth, that's fine. I don't mind that because then they play the number one seed. I just don't want to be the number one seed that is playing the Brooklyn Nets in the first round. So, like, what do they think is the best case scenario? Are they still trying to get the number one seed, or do you get the sense that it doesn't matter to them?
I get the sense that it does matter to them. Like, I think what you said is there's no way that they don't feel that way, that, like, we don't want to play Brooklyn right away.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think everything is so close, both in this 1-4 race and then also, like, you know, 5 and 6, they're equal. 8, 9, and 10 are pretty much a toss-up right now. And also, the Sixers have a super easy schedule down the stretch after this game, Mike. Like, they have, by record, they have the easiest schedule in the league after this game, their final games. There will be a few of those games where they can't lose if they try. The other teams will be tanking, giving them away to them.
I'm not sure I like that, to be honest, because that's the road to a number one seed, is it not?
Yeah, it is. I mean, yeah, it's just that, you know, you look at the schedule and that seems like what's going to happen. I mean, I guess they could, you know, potentially sit out some of their players to fight it back. But so to me, it's pretty simple. Like, I don't really think the seed matters quite as much more than the matchup. And, like, to me, the ideal matchup would be not Brooklyn in the first round and Miami in the second round. Now, how you can position yourself in the standings to get that matchup, that's not easy because there's so many moving parts here. And all of these different teams have, you know, chances to move up to the one seed and down to the four seed. That would be the ideal path. My guess is they'll probably get one of those two. Like, I think you know, I don't think they're going to get the super hard schedule. Like, if they do have to play Milwaukee or Boston in the second round, my guess is they'll play, you know, a team they should handle in the first round. But that's sort of where I'm looking at it right now.
All right. So have you looked at Miami's schedule now? Because, you know, they were on a bad streak. They finally beat a bad Kings team. But now we're talking at Boston, at Chicago, at Toronto. Like, I'm scared that the Sixers get the number one seed. Because I agree with you. I think if, like, meeting Miami in the second round, that's why I say if the Sixers finish fourth, to get Miami second round would be the perfect scenario. But I don't think Miami's going to hold on to that either.
So maybe you go for the one seed. You just try as hard as possible. Hope that Brooklyn kind of lost a game that I thought to Charlotte that really could have solidified the seventh spot for them. You know, they would have been hosting that game, that play-in game, and they also have Kyrie available to play in those games now. Mm-hmm. I think you could have assumed that, like, all right, try and get the one seed to avoid two. I think that's the way you got to go for it, Mike. Like, I think they're going to not go all out for the one seed, but I unless, like, we get to, like, the final day of the season, final weekend of the season, and there are some obvious paths they can take, I'm not sure we see the shenanigans from this team. It just, you know, they're also, I think, a little bit scarred in that, like, they had the perfect pass last year, just an unbelievably perfect pass. And what did that do for them? You know, like, nothing. So, I don't think if there is a chance to get that sort of perfect scenario, I think they will do it. But it's not obvious right now the way the standings are.
All right, let me swing it to this Embiid Jokic thing and the story that came out today, the NBA MVP straw poll, where Jokic gets 62 first place votes and Embiid has 29 first place votes. To me, this, and we've been talking about it all day, that's reflective of the national perception of quote-unquote Philly bad. Because I can't think of any, like, it's ridiculous to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I'm not going to bash Nikola Jokic, Mike. Like, I think the guy's having...
No, I get it. Great player, but look at that disparity.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because Tim, the guy who did it, is a friend of mine, and he... the last time he did it, they were neck and neck with Embiid actually slightly ahead. So
yeah.
I'm a little curious how that changed so much over the past couple of weeks. But as far as, like, the MVP is concerned, Mike, like, and I think we're already starting to see some of the campaigning from some of the people around Embiid. I would imagine we continue to see that. If the Sixers are the one seed, I think he's going to win it. I really do. I think part of winning the MVP is just, like, telling a story. And, you know, I think Jokic also has worked with a bad supporting cast because of the injuries to his two running mates this year. But if Embiid for two-thirds of the season navigates this Simmons thing and the Sixers end up with the number one seed, I still think he's kind of going to get it. These aren't the exact people who are going to vote for the MVP, by the way. It's just kind of a... You know, a selection of national people.
Okay.
So, yeah, I was surprised by that, though, Mike. Like, I don't have a lot else for you on
well,
that.
Well, I mean, you know the city. Do you believe in covering the NBA that you sense a negative perception of the Sixers that has carried over all these years from the process?
Maybe a little bit. Yeah, maybe a little bit. But here's I guess the counter to that would be, like, I think Joel Embiid's Q rating from a national media perspective is pretty high. Like, I think everybody enjoys him. Like, I think everybody enjoys watching him play. They like that he now plays all of his games, and he's obviously, like, a very engaging personality and a good quote and all of those things, too. So, yeah, like, I mean, you know, did getting Harden maybe, like, take a little bit of luster off his season and kind of the weirdness? I don't really think Embiid's play has dropped off that much since then, so that wouldn't necessarily be fair. I'm very surprised that shifted so much, because I don't think Jokic has done anything crazy over the past couple of weeks to change the narrative either.
Well, but, you know, Jokic also tried to hurt somebody with a cheap shot. It's like, those things just fall off people's back. Like, what did Embiid ever do?
he gets very sensitive. I mean, but, like, I think rightfully so. Like, hey, if I did that, like, man, that would be a front page story.
You know,
Jokic, I mean, I remember, I don't think this should really affect the MVP race, but I do remember last season when the Nuggets were getting swept out of the playoffs by the Suns. Like, he had a cheap shot again, like, to get ejected out of that final game.
And
I do think of, like, If that happened to Embiid, I think that would have been a bigger story. Like, there's just no question.
Yeah, it's just this whole Philadelphia narrative is just, you know, it's poisonous with these people. But anyway, last question. Danny Green played a lot of minutes, and I didn't think he was going to, I thought he would be a really small minute guy. He played more minutes than Thybulle in the last game. Is it inching back his way because of his veteran status?
So Doc, after the game, said something, because we asked him about that. Like, he said something along the lines of, you know, Matisse was in foul trouble. He thought that the spacing issues were a little bit of a problem. I don't think it should have. Like, I frankly think Thybulle should have played, because Devin Booker is, like, he's terrific, but he's the perfect guy for Thybulle to guard. Like, he doesn't, you know, he tries to pump fake you. He doesn't draw a lot of fouls. We've seen Thybulle have some really very good stretches of defense against that guy. And I thought that was a mistake not to play him in that game. But, yeah, like, I think it's symptomatic of just, like, I wonder if Doc is going to go with offense, like, when push comes to shove with this team. And that was the case. Like, you played the best team in the league. Harden did not look good in that game. But, like, I thought the Sixers were fairly competitive in that game, despite not shooting the ball that well. And he went with offense down the stretch, which I thought was pretty interesting. I don't think Danny Green, frankly, like, has done enough to deserve those minutes. Like, I think Niang or maybe Milton or somebody could easily have also gotten that call, but, you know, he did go with him down the stretch of that game the other day.
Yeah. All right, so tonight, how you feeling? Are they ready for this game? And if they lose or win, what's it mean? Nothing?
I certainly think, like, from what you said, the first question, like, I do think Harden playing well in a win, yeah, does it, like, mean, like, you know, you need to throw a parade tomorrow, that they're ready for the playoffs? No, I'm not sure about that. But I do think, like, it might make everybody feel a little bit better. Like, okay, yeah, this is at least, you know, this is at least in him, and this is, like, our highest level. We need to, like, to see one of those dominant games, like those early games or that Clippers game the other night, to see one of those dominant games against a team that, you know, a lot of people are thinking is going to make the finals again. And I think that would be, like, it'd be more of a psychological boost than really, like, anything tangible. Yeah. But, yeah, I think it's a somewhat big regular season game for sure.
All right. Sixers, what, a one-point favorite tie at this point?
Half point, man.
Half point favorite.
Thin.
Very thin. Rich, always a pleasure. And do your best work tonight.
All right, Mike, thanks.
All right, there he is. Rich Hoffman will be.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.